28 minutes past hour number one back here on Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Over the airwaves of SiriusXM POTUS Radio, channel 124. It is my honor and privilege to have my next guest. I've waited a long time to talk to this man. He's a very, very busy man. But boy, I'm excited to talk to this man. A graduate of West Point. Served 8 years in the Army as an Apache helicopter pilot, including 55 combat missions in Iraq and, of course, 2 tours in Saudi Arabia. He is a representative out of the 38th Congressional District in Texas. He is the one and only Representative Wesley Hunt. My man, how are you, man?
Hey.
It's great to meet you. It's great to talk to you. How you doing?
The pleasure's all mine. It's an honor to be on. Thank you for having me on, Stephen A. I really appreciate this, brother, more than you know. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Man, please, I couldn't wait to talk to you. So you saw the State of the Union last night.
Yes, I did.
What did you walk away? What did you walk away feeling after watching the President's State of the Union and the interaction, obviously, between the Republicans and the Democrats, mainly him, and the Democrats in attendance? Your thoughts?
That's a great question. Well, I want to start off by saying this. The gentleman that got the Medal of Honor for flying that mission down south was something that really resonates with me. You know, I'm an Apache helicopter pilot. I flew a lot of those missions in Baghdad, 55, as you stated. And the heroism that we saw from that gentleman and the fact that he was honored with the highest honor that the military can offer a soldier is something that really warmed my heart. I also like seeing the other Medal of Honor that was given to the other veteran as well. That's the kind of service and sacrifice that it takes to really preserve our values and our way of life in this great nation. So for starters, as a military man, as a guy that my brother, sister, and I all went to West Point, my dad is a retired lieutenant colonel in the military. Obviously, the military runs strong in my family, 60 years worth of military service. So to see the acknowledgement of that kind of valor is something that will always hit home with someone like me. To talk about the interaction between President Trump, though, and how he basically baited a lot of the Democrats into very basic questions here. I mean, do you believe in a sovereign nation or not? Do you believe in the safety of Americans or not? Do you believe in the fact that President Trump got reelected because roughly 20 million people entered this country illegally and we had no idea who they were? You talk about me being a diplomatic liaison officer in Saudi Arabia. Do you know I had to have a diplomatic passport just to enter Saudi Arabian airspace because this country knew exactly who was entering and was exiting their country? And you mean to tell me that this is America? This is the greatest country in the world, and we have 20 million people that are in our country and we don't know who they are? And the idea of trying to keep us safe, this is not even a partisan issue. It's a nonpartisan issue. So the interactions that I saw between the president and many of the Democrats, I found to be kind of interesting. And just like you were talking about earlier, brother, you were talking about how he baits people in ways that only he can do. It's a pretty obvious question. Just stand up when it's pro-America, regardless of what your party affiliation is. But the fact that you cannot stand up just because President Trump said something really drives the point home of that you hate him more than you love this country.
And the interesting part that hit me, Representative Hunt, was that Elizabeth Warren stood up when he talked about basically eradicating, what are they talking about when you were stock trading and all of this other stuff in the nation's capital? You can't have these people, doing that kind of stuff. They stood up for that, yes. But she didn't stand up when he asked that particular question. What is it like for you to be on Capitol Hill in today's day, having to deal with folks on the opposite side of the aisle? Is it really as truculent? Is it really as acerbic as it seems?
It's not as vitriolic as you might think. Obviously, you see a lot of the political theater that goes on. You see a lot of the jostling back and forth. And I will admit that there is a certain level of civility behind closed doors that nobody really sees. But I will also say that it's gotten more vitriolic over the course of the past few years. You know, I call this the attitude era of politics, kind of like the attitude era in WWE with Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock and those guys. Right. That's exactly the era that we are living in right now. And a lot of that is because of the rise of social media. It's the rise of a President Trump winning, not winning the next election, then coming back and winning again. Only the second president in the history of the country to ever do that. And so whenever you talk about a lot of our interactions, a lot of it is basically rooted in we are siloed politically. I mean, I consider myself to be a very strong conservative, and there are certain things that I am not really willing to bend or break on. One of those things for me is I know the difference between a man and a woman. Another one of those things for me is I believe in border security, strong border security. Brother, I'm somebody that has fought for this country. This is not a partisan issue. We know every single person that's entering our country and leaving our country. I am somebody that's for getting rid of a lot of our national debt. We're running a $2 trillion annual deficit. Now, the juxtaposition of how I feel about those things oftentimes is the contrary to my colleagues on the left. And so the thing about that on Capitol Hill that I like the most, though, is this. We are in hearings. I get to speak. They get to speak. We get to go back and forth and back and forth. And at the end of the day, everyone gets to hear everyone's side. But I want people to know this. What you see on TV, what you see in your representation, we are a reflection of America today. And if you want strong leadership, and if you want people to stand for your beliefs, well, that's who's actually going to get elected. Now, I also do believe that we have to usher in a time where there is more civility. Right now, brother, it's just too hot. We have people that are getting shot. I have my life threatened multiple times. I've had an increase in security, just me being on the campaign trail. Everyone needs to tranquilo and kind of take down that temperature. But at the end of the day, I'm also an Apache driver. I believe in this country. I believe in fighting for this great nation, no matter what your religion, race, color, or creed is. I believe in that. And I think we are going to usher in the next time of more civility once the next generation enters the fray.
I'm going to get into you and the election that you're in, that you're vying for as we speak. I'll get into that in just a second. But when you get, before I do that, when we talk about folks, what's a reflection of the country, rather? Yeah. I'm going to ask you, in your estimation, is this a reflection of the country when we're talking about Governor Gavin Newsom of California and what brouhaha he recently got himself entangled in? Let's watch Governor Gavin Newsom speaking to the mayor of Atlanta, Mayor Dickens, and see what he said and your thoughts about this. Take it away, guys.
I'm not trying to impress you. I'm just trying to impress upon you. I'm like you. I'm no better than you. You know, I'm a 960 SAT guy. And, you know, and I'm not trying to offend anyone, you know, trying to act all there if you got 940. But literally a 960 SAT guy. I cannot, you've never seen me read a speech because I cannot read a speech.
Now, me personally, I saw folks on the left, folks who were African-American, by the way, Representative Hunt, basically yeah. saying he was talking to an audience filled with a bunch of white folks. Mm-hmm. I saw him look at the mayor when he made the statement that he made. I'm not one to knock him because I can assure you my SAT score in all likelihood was worse than 960 because I was busy running the streets instead of studying. But I wasn't a graduate of Westport. I wasn't as accomplished as you and your siblings were. I can tell you that much. I can feel one way about it. How did you feel about it?
Well, I call it the soft bigotry of low expectations. There are a lot of black men and women that aren't like that. A lot of us really did study hard. We really did work very hard. You see, I had parents that believe in education. We had a sign in our house that said Jesus plus education equals success. There's a reason why my brother, sister, and I all went to West Point. There's a reason why I earned 3 master's degrees and 4 years from Cornell University. My brother is a Harvard Business School graduate. My sister has her master's degree in applied mathematics. It was a West Point instructor while both my brother and I were cadets. We were black doing it the entire time. And so when you say that I can't read and I have a 960 SAT, the insinuation that you are putting on all black people is that we are a monolith, is that this is how you view us. This is what you really think about us. And look, I understand some of it may have been a little bit tongue-in-cheek and he was pandering to an audience. But for whatever reason, I see a lot of pandering that comes from the left. I think about Hillary Clinton carrying hot sauce in her purse. I think about Joe Biden saying, if you don't vote for me, then you ain't black. I think about Kathy Hochul talking about, you know, black kids don't even know what a computer is. And I see these kinds of things and I just shake my head. That is not who we are as a people. Now, Stephen, you talk about you didn't do good on your SATs, but you have a pretty extensive vocabulary, as I have heard over the years. So clearly you are an astute man and you have studied quite a bit. But that's just it. We are not the same. And you have to understand why that's insulting to people like me. Gavin, you're not like me. I studied my butt off to get here. I worked my butt off to get here. Hard work, grit, determination, and I'm standing on my own 2 feet as a black man that represents a white majority district that President Trump would have won by 20 points, and I won by 25 points because I'm being judged not by the color of my skin, but by the content of my character. And there are a lot of conservative white people and black people and Hispanic people that voted for me, but under no circumstances are you going to just belittle us by assuming that all black people have a 960 SAT and we could barely read.
What do you say to folks on the opposite side of the aisle, then the GOP, then Republicans, that look at Republicans and they say, okay, you can get at Gavin Newsom like that and say those things, but in the same breath, what is the Republican Party, what have conservatives tried to do for the black community spanning decades? Have they ever cared about black folks in this country? How do you, as a conservative who happens to be black, answer such cynicism coming from the other side when they say things like that?
Well, it's very simple, brother. We live in an era to where there are no more slaves and are no more slave owners. You see, I live in an era of today. My great-great-grandfather was born on a plantation. His name was Silas Crawford. He was born on Rosedown Plantation, about 30 miles north of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Three of his great-great-grandchildren went to West Point. Three of his great-great-grandchildren served in the military. At one point, my brother, sister, and I were all deployed in Baghdad at the same time for 2 months. We had a praying mother and a praying community. One of his great-great-grandchildren, me, is running for the United States Senate and is surging in the polls against, last I checked, two white guys, because nobody really cares about what I look like. They care about my service to this nation and who I am as a human being. And let me tell you something, brother, I've done all of this as a conservative. The most racist thing that I've kind of seen over the course of the past few years is this, though. It is the insinuation that black people are too stupid to get an ID to vote. You have to have an ID for everything. And Republicans aren't looking at black people or white people or Asian people for Hispanic people. Not at all. They are saying if you're an American and you are competent, you can figure out how to have a cell phone and an apartment and buy groceries and buy liquor and get on airplanes and buy anything else. I don't care what you look like. You could be on United. You could be on Spirit. You could be on American. At the end of the day, everybody has to have an ID. That has nothing to do with race. You see, that is the Republican Party that I am currently coming up in right now in this phase. This ain't about the color of your skin. It's about are you an American and do you bleed red or not?
Well, Representative Hunt, I got to tell you something right now. You ain't got much to worry about with that argument because I just saw the mayor of New York City requiring two IDs for people that want to get money for shoveling snow. So if you can shovel snow, you're damn sure. You can get an ID to shovel snow, you're damn sure should be able to require to have an ID to vote.
My man.
But let me get back to you. Let me get back to you on this one right here because you're running against a long-term in this race. You're running against a long-term incumbent in John Cornyn and a MAGA heavyweight in Ken Paxton. What should Texas voters, why should Texas voters choose you, the third man, at least at the moment, instead of sticking with the established legislative power or the, you know, for one of those guys, Paxton or Cornyn? Why you?
It's time for the next generation of leadership to step up. The United States Senate is not a retirement community. John Cornyn has been around for 24 years. That is two decades. The first time John Cornyn got elected to office as a judge, brother, I was 11 months old. There's a reason why. There's a reason why our vice president is 41 years old. Our secretary of state's in his early 50s. Our secretary of war is in his mid-50s. Tulsi Gabbard is in his mid-40s. Tulsi Gabbard is in her mid-40s because it's time for that bridge, that upper end of the millennial spectrum to actually get in and make sure that we have the same values that the older generation passes down to the next generation. At the end of the day, the United States Senate is not a retirement community. And John Cornyn has now spent what will be $100 million in this race to be polling in the 20s, and we are surging. And what I've discovered is this: as I got in this race, I thought I would be fighting against Democrats. I'm actually fighting against my own party. Leadership and establishment has spent tens of millions of dollars hitting me in my own state, participating, SLF, the NRSC, participating in a Republican primary in Texas, in a state that President Trump won by over 15 points. And they're spending money against me to protect the establishment guy who was polling in the 20s. It's a complete and total abomination. And I waited 9 months to get into this race because I wanted to see what the president would do as well. You see, the president has not endorsed two Republican incumbents in the entire country, and one of them is John Cornyn. And that's because the primary voter in Texas has moved on. And I believe I am the person that can win this primary, that can win this general election, and it won't cost a ton of money. And I am already outperforming Jasmine Crockett, and I'm already outperforming James Tallarico, and I'm outperforming my two colleagues against them already. That's why I'm in this race. That's why I'm fighting till the very end to make sure that we end up in first or second place. This thing goes to a runoff, and then we will then prevail and be the next senator from the great state of Texas.
However, your opponents are running ads about your quote-unquote mixed votes in the House. How do you respond to the critique that you've abandoned your current constituents' voices in D.C. to chase a promotion to the Senate? What do you say to that?
That's a great question. First of all, when I first got into the House of Representatives a couple of years ago, I missed a large tranche of votes because my little boy was in the NICU. And then also the president tapped me to be one of his top surrogates traveling around the country during the last election. I was the first person in the country to endorse him in this last election. And as a reward, he wanted me to be one of his top surrogates. And so when the president asked you to do something, brother, you know, you kind of hop on that plane and you got to do it. But of course, this last few months, as I have been running, people need to know this. I don't have $100 million war chest that's paid for by the D.C. swamp. I have to get out and do events. I have to get out and meet voters. I have done over 50 events and over 200 interviews. I am earning the vote of my fellow Texans. Only two times has the Speaker of the House or the President called me to come back to D.C. for very critical votes, and I was there, and I will always be there. But I want people to know this, too. How many votes did J.D. Vance miss when he was tapped to be the Vice President? All of them. How many votes did Tim Scott miss when he was running for president? 150. One of the most missed votes in all in the history of the Senate. When you are searching and trying to seek higher office, you're going to have to miss some votes. But it's not about the votes that you miss. It's about the votes that you take. And John Cornyn has made way too many poor votes. And that's why he's in this position.
I'd be remiss in neglecting to ask you about the video where President Trump superimposed apes on the former president and the first lady. Got to ask you about that because in a WFAA interview last week, you defended the president's social media post regarding the Obamas. I wanted to know, for the sake of my audience, I'm not going to push back. You know, I felt differently. I certainly didn't defend them. I want to know why you felt the way that you felt. I want you to explain to the audience actually what you felt and why as quickly as you possibly can so we can follow up with some other questions.
Of course. So when the president said that a staffer made a mistake, I believe that. Let me tell you something. President Trump is not a racist. If you believe President Trump is a racist or you think he's not a racist, I don't believe he's racist. This man has been very kind to me and my family. But back in the 80s, when he was on Oprah's show, he wasn't a racist then. When he was on The View before he was a president, he wasn't a racist then. When he was hanging around a lot of black folks like Jesse Jackson, he was actually his first check. Nobody said he was racist then. And then all of a sudden, he runs as a Republican, and then now he's a racist. I take him for his word. He said it was a mistake. It was a mistake by a staffer. I moved on from it immediately.
In fairness to you, let me tell you what my position is. I never called them a racist. I'm still not calling them a racist. But my whole point is that's entirely different than do you believe he did it? Because you got to me, I would follow up with you, with Byron Donald, who I know, or anybody else, and ask this question. When he said it was an unnamed staffer, did y'all insist on finding out who the hell that unnamed staffer was and finding out whether or not they've been removed from their position for doing such a thing? Did you at least do that?
Let me give you some insight to how this operation works here, because I've had the honor of flying around with the president. I've had the honor of flying around with his plane and on his plane with his staff. I've been on Air Force One. There are a lot of people that are running around. There are a lot of people that have access to that account. There are a lot of people that are posting things. I do believe it was an honest mistake at the end of the day. I believe that with my heart and soul. And I will also say this as well. I don't know if there was anything punitive that was done. That's necessarily not my job. But I do think the president probably gave the person another shot because I didn't hear of any heads rolling. People make mistakes.
Two questions before I let you get on out of here, because I know you only got a couple of minutes left. One is this. Last night, the president claimed the only way Democrats win is through rampant fraud and non-citizen voting. As a member of Congress, have you seen any evidence that justifies calling the entire Democratic Party cheaters from the rostrum of the House?
At the end of the day, when you have to ask these people whether or not they stand for the safety of this country or not, and you see that they can't even stand up for that, it's actually a relatively fair assessment, my brother. And I hate saying that because I understand where you're getting at. You don't want to paint a brush on everybody. You don't want to say that all Democrats feel this way, all independents feel this way, all Republicans feel this way. But at the end of the day, when you look up on that board and you see who votes for what, it is extraordinarily polarized. And that goes for everything. And that goes for the safety of this country. And that goes to what President Trump was even referring to last night. And even last year, during last year's State of the Union address, he said, I could come up with a cure for cancer. And people would still sit down and not support that and not support me because they hate me so much. These are the polarizing times that we live in. It ebbs and flows. Ain't our first rodeo in this country. This is a country that went through world wars. This is a country that went through the civil rights movement. This is a country that went through Jimmy Carter. And then we had 12 years of Tip O'Neill and we had Reagan. This is all a part of that cycle. We are in a cycle that I call the Attitude Era. And I hope and I pray that in the future, it begats a more collaborative cycle. But this is where we're at right now. And we are both dug in. I'm a strong conservative. I'm going to stand up for my values here in Texas. Like I said, I'm in a Trump plus 20 district here in Houston. I'm telling you, I'm going to stand up for my people. But at the end of the day, I do want to see us become more collaborative in the future.
I got to ask this very last question before you go. And I got a somewhat smirk on my face because I'm imagining what the answer is going to be when I ask this question. And I can't wait. In your perfect world, to win that Senate seat in Texas, first of all, do you believe you're going to win? And if so, who do you wish as the Republican nominee for that seat that you end up going up against on the Democratic
side?
That is
a great, that's a great question.
That's what I want to know.
Oh, I love it. You're my man. So at the end of the day, I don't do anything that I don't believe I'm going to do. I believe that the Lord orders my steps in his word. I believe I am here because of the blood of Jesus Christ. And I believe that I'm doing exactly what I need to be. And I believe that I am going to win this seat. Otherwise, I wouldn't be in the first place. And if I win, lose, or draw, I am always a winner because I'm a believer in him. And if I don't win, then the Lord will put me to where he needs to be. But let me tell you something. I, as an Apache pilot, as an Apache fighter, as a guy that fought for this nation, I am fighting for Texas. And I absolutely do believe that I am going to be the next senator from Texas. When you ask me who would I like to debate against, I'm going to be absolutely honest with you, man. It's got to be Jasmine Crockett. I can't lie to you. I think I'm going to do better than Ken and John against either one of them because of my energy, because of my ability to actually campaign. I'm the only one that's actually running a real campaign. I have done more stops than anybody else running in this race. But I would love to see the juxtaposition of the way I view America and the way I view the world on stage with the juxtaposition of the way that Jasmine views this world. We are roughly the same age. We've both been black the whole time. We are a member of two very different parties with two very different ideas. And the idea of me talking to my fellow Texans about how I believe that we are victors in this country and talking about how, let's be blunt here, she will take a more victim's mentality in this whole debate. I would love for that to be front and center because I do believe that this country is the greatest country in the world. And yes, we've had our issues, but through hard work, grit, determination, Jasmine Crockett is a congresswoman. I'm a congressman out of Houston. She's out of the Dallas area. And here we are on stage having a very healthy debate coming from opposite sides.
I know you got to go, but you said victim's mentality and she would take that. You know people are going to take that. I don't want to interpret it for you. What you mean by that? What did you mean by saying she's going to adopt the victim's mentality? Last question.
Well, she already has adopted a victim's mentality. We hear it all the time. Everything is about race. Everything is about division. Everything is about as a black this, as a black that. And let me tell you something. I recognize the charted path that we've had in this country. I also recognize that I'm sitting here right now talking to one of the most successful black men in broadcasting in the history of this country. You too have been black your entire life. I want to talk about the progress. And I understand maybe it was more difficult for us than other people at certain times in our lives, but that's actually what made us better. That's actually what made us stronger. And now here we are having a very healthy, substantive conversation as black men in the greatest country in the world. I am not a victim, and something tells me you're not either.
Representative Wesley Hunt, I mean, this man is something special. Listen, you know you always got a home here. Anytime you want to come back, you are always welcome here. I ain't going to always agree with you now. You know that.
I know that.
But I'm here. Don't ever worry about fair and equal airtime on this show. You got
Thank
it,
you,
my man. Anytime you want it. All the best to you, man. I'm so thankful that you took time out of your busy schedule to come on the show. It really means a lot to me. I've been waiting to interview you for a long time, and you delivered the goods every bit as much as I expected you to. Thank you so much.
Man.
And good luck in that race. I'm definitely rooting for you to capture the Republican nomination for the Senate seat in Texas. Make no mistake about it. You take it easy, and we'll talk soon, all right?
Yes, sir. God bless
one
you.
And only.
Thank you very much.
God bless. The one and only Representative Wesley Hunt out of Texas. You heard him loud and clear. The brother, the real deal. He ain't playing. He ain't playing. I mean, he ain't going to be no pushover now. All right, it's gonna be something. I've been waiting to talk for that man for a long time, and he did not disappoint. 866-967-6887. That's 866-96-POTUS. More coming up before we get to hour number two in a minute with Robert Costa. Don't go away. It's Stephen A. Straight Shooter in the house.